Live all across the United States and Canada, the Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff is on the air. Hank is president of the Christian Research Institute. At CRI, we desire to equip the body of Christ to defend the truth of the gospel, the reliability of the Bible, and give reasons for the historic Christian faith because truth matters. To find out more about the Christian Research Institute, the Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, or great resources we recommend, go to our website, www.equip.org. To ask Hank a question on air, call 888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. We'll go to our callers in just a moment, but we start the broadcast today with an answer from the Creation Answer Book, now available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. The question is it silly to believe in Noah's flood? And the answer is that from the perspective of a biblical worldview, the flood is the most catastrophic event in the history of humanity, but from the perspective of internet spoofers, it is also the most comical. But is it really silly? And I would say absolutely no, because common sense demands we allow for both natural and supernatural explanations to make sense of the universe in which we live. Realities such as the origin of life and the phenomenon of the human mind pose intractable difficulties for merely natural explanations. Furthermore, reason forces us to look beyond the natural world to a supernatural designer who not only sustains the world, but who supernaturally intervenes in the affairs of his created handiwork, which is, of course, precisely what the Genesis flood account entails. Finally, if we are willing to believe that God created the heavens and the earth as opposed to the untenable notion that nothing created everything, that life came from non-life, and that the non-life gave rise to objective morals, we'd have little difficulty believing the Genesis account of Noah and the flood. Many more answers available in the Creation Answer Book, again now available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. Also want to mention the third book in my trilogy, The Last Disciple series. So the last book is The Last Temple, now available for your gift. You can get all three with the third book personalized to you, a family member or a friend, for your gift of $100 or more to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. Check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org, or simply write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. You can also pick up the telephone, talk to our resource consultants at number 888-7000, and the letter is CRI. A lot of you hanging on. We'll go right to the phone calls. First up is Cecil, Bakersfield, California, listening on the World Wide Web. Hi, Cecil.
Hi, Hank. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Hank, just real quick, want to say appreciate your ministry. I got your book, The Apocalypse Code. Also, Has God Spoken? And the Creation Answer Book, so certainly appreciate it. And a little background really quick on me. Grew up Catholic, gave my life to Christ when I was 20 years old in a great Bible-believing church. And my wife and I are actually planning on becoming full-time Christian missionaries in Thailand in 10 years. And we're going to take off next week to start training for that. So I appreciate your ministry, being online. And yeah, just want to say appreciate you a whole lot. My question is from the book of Daniel, a passage that's probably pretty familiar to you. It's Daniel 70 weeks. When I gave my life to Christ, I was taught by a great theologian, teaching, you know, dispensationalism and pre-trib, pre-mill, you know, all that jazz. And since I've been, you know, reading your book and listening to your broadcast and just searching the scriptures for myself, I'm not really seeing that as well. So I kind of understand, you know, Revelation as a whole and what it looks like when Christ comes back and all that. But I'm really having a difficult time with the Daniel 70 weeks. Can you kind of break that down for me, please, Hank?
Well, it's very difficult because there's so little agreement among biblical exegetes concerning this prophecy. In fact, if you look at the way this is translated, it is translated in various manners in various translations of the Bible. So the Revised Standard Version is very different from the New International Version. And also there's a lot of discussion and a lot of contradiction amongst interpreters in terms of the starting dates and the ending dates. But I think what we should ultimately look at here is that this has to do typologically with Jesus Christ, but ultimately it has to do with Daniel's prophecy with respect to what is going to happen with respect to the desecration of the temple under Antiochus IV Epiphanes, and then freedom for the Jews under Judas Maccabeus. So I think that's ultimately what this prophecy has to do with. But if you look, and you already have the book, look at two different things in which I explicate this. One is the abomination of desolation, and that's broken up into three parts in Has God Spoken? But look under the section where I deal with the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel. Then also look on page 333, I believe it is, where I have an endnote where I lay out that this could not possibly be what so many dispensationalists have said, a chronology right up to the point where Jesus Christ rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. Jesus, the disciples, and the early church writers did not cite this prophecy as proof that Jesus would arrive at a specific point in history. While they do cite many far more vague prophecies, if this really was a timepiece to the time that Jesus was riding into Jerusalem on a donkey, the New Testament writers would have seized on this prophecy as they seized on other fulfilled prophecies to demonstrate that Christ had appeared in history. So I think that the Bible does give us specific information in terms of the date of Christ's visitation, but it's in far more general time parameters than this. And again, there's little agreement among commentators concerning this prophecy, and therefore I'm highly suspect of using it in the way that it's so typically been used. But again, you can check this out in Has God Spoken, and you already have the book.
Okay, excellent. Hank, can I get another quick question in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, just about Revelation, how the months are kind of laid out in three and a half years. Does that kind of go with or parallel with the fact that the Jewish war was approximately 3.5 months? Is that what John is trying to communicate, that there's going to be, you know, this great tribulation that's going to be approximately 3.5 years, that's going to end and the destruction of the temple in 70 AD?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, there's, interestingly enough, a parallel to this in the book of Daniel as well. And again, I lay this out under the section that I just indicated to you, which is the abomination of desolation, spoken of not only by Jesus, but by the prophet Daniel.
Excellent. Well, Hank, thank you very much. Lord bless your ministry. My wife and I certainly appreciate supporting you guys as well.
Thank you, Cecil. God bless you and your missionary efforts.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I want to go back to the phone lines, talk to Christy, Independence, Missouri, listening on Bot Radio. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Hank. I just wanted to say I appreciate your ministry, and thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
My question is has to do with tithing. I tithe off of my income every week because that's when I'm paid. But my confusion is I'm getting ready to get a settlement from a car accident that I had, and also I've recently went through a divorce, and I'm going to get a substantial amount of money from that. And I've gotten different advice from different Christians as to tithe that. I mean, some say that you tithe just your earnings, and others say, you know, that I should tithe off that, and I'm just really confused.
Well, Christy, it's sort of a backward way of looking at it. The whole idea of the tithe is to learn to depend on God as opposed to learn to depend on yourself. So when you give, it's not out of obligation. It is give because you have been given. Give because you want to extend His kingdom. Give because you want to learn to trust in Him. So I wouldn't feel as though you have to give by some kind of legalistic standard because you got a legal settlement. I think rather if you feel led of the Lord to give a portion of that for the extension of His kingdom, then give with a grateful heart. That's the whole idea. Tithing is the training wheels of giving. It's a way to learn to revere the Lord your God always, as Moses put it. And certainly you don't want to give out of a legalistic standard, because if you do, you're better off hanging on to the money yourself.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that helps out a lot. I mean, I definitely have been, you know, feeling convicted that, yes, I do want to tithe with a giving heart. I definitely want to. And so, like I said, I was just confused on that, and you've helped me out a lot. I appreciate that.
You got it. And, of course, the Bible chronicles the prayer of David as he thanked God for the very privilege of being able to give to the work of the Lord. I remember those words, but who am I and who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? Everything comes from You. And we have given You only what comes from Your hand. And I have seen with joy how willingly Your people who are here have given to You. So what began as a spiritual discipline had evolved appropriately into sheer delight. And I hope that that same thing will happen with many Christians in our epoch of time, because there's no telling what could be accomplished in our generation if we too may but catch the joy of contagious giving. Not only would we be empowered to spread the gospel around the globe, but we would be enabled to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to care for the sick, and like our forefathers, those who founded these great centers of Christian education, who established hospitals and funded relief organizations, we might as yet leave an indelible mark on our generation. For only when the training wheels of tithing come off will the world of free will giving become our playground. And, of course, so often on the Bible Answer Man broadcast, I'm asking people to support this ministry. Why? It is because it's an opportunity to use your resource to extend His kingdom. And so, ultimately, when you give, you're not giving to us, but through us, touching the lives of people, not only for time, but also for eternity. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Mark in Bowling Green, Kentucky, listening on the World Wide Web. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Hank. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I just want to, I guess, reiterate what you're saying. I've been blessed to be a monthly supporter, and I appreciate what your ministry does, what you guys do at the Research Institute, and encourage everybody else to do the same if they can. So,
well, thank you.
I had a question for you. I know I listen to you often and often hear you talk about how Jesus suffered more than the cumulative sufferings of humanity. I was talking to a guy trying to explain to him and couldn't really give him any good Bible verses, and didn't know whether that was more of like a theological deduction or whether that was there somewhere specifically I could point him.
Well, bingo. I mean, it really is theological reflection on the two natures of Christ, the fact that He is the God-man, Theanthropos. He is 100% human and 100% divine, so one person with two natures. So here we have the problem of sin and the doctrine of the atonement, and theological reflection on these doctrines points out that, first of all, Jesus took upon Him as the infinite God-man the sins of the world, and therefore He suffered in His body, He suffered in His psyche, all that we suffer. He atoned for not only all suffering, but all sin. And therefore we say, because we suffer not for the sins of humanity, we couldn't. We say that Christ did, and therefore he suffered more than any person and more than the collective sufferings of all of humanity. And the theological reflection comes from passages like 1 John 2:2, where it tells us, in the words of John, that Jesus atoned for the sins of the world. So again, it is precisely as you said in the prologue to the question, a theological deduction or a theological reflection from passages like Isaiah 52, Psalm 22, Matthew 27, 1 John 2, and the like.
Great explanation. I really appreciate it.
You got it. And thank you for your encouraging words. We are coming up to a station break. We'll be right back on the other side of the break with more answers to your questions. Do remember the number to dial in the U.S. or Canada to get your question answered live on air, 888-ASK-HANK. Also translates to 888-275-4265. Back in just a few moments. In the meantime, you may want to check out the World Wide Web at equip.org and see the Christian Research Journal. It is our premier award-winning magazine. You can subscribe online again at equip.org. Be right back.
The book of Revelation is one of the hardest books in the Bible to understand, unless you hold the key to its hope and inspiration. Let Hank unlock Revelation for you through his gripping new fiction work, The Last Temple, the long-anticipated completion of his Last Disciple trilogy. It's our gift when you support the broadcast with a gift today. For your gift of $100 or more, you can receive the whole trilogy. Your gift makes more broadcasts like this possible, so please call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org to give today. We'll return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast right after this. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless processes, or created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work, and even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. That's why we want to send you a copy of Hank's Creation Answer Book in appreciation for your gift of ministry support today. The Creation Answer Book puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Your gift is important, supporting more of the broadcast and resources that have changed your life. So please give today by calling 888-7000-CRI or visiting equip.org. That's equip.org. And let us rush you your copy of the Creation Answer Book. Thank you for your partnership. Master the main and plain things of historic Christianity in minutes and remember them for a lifetime. Memorable Keys to Essential Christian Doctrine is a user-friendly guide to doctrines that form the dividing line between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults using the hankronym DOCTRINE. D stands for Deity of Christ, O for Original Sin, C for Canon of Scripture, T for Trinity, R for Resurrection, I for Incarnation, N for New Creation, and E for Eschatology. To order Memorable Keys to Essential Christian Doctrine in an accessible, fully laminated, and easy-to-use flip chart that you can use to communicate boldly and confidently with precision and clarity, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or go to www.equip.org. That's equip.org. The first century A.D., a time of tribulation and terror as the Roman Empire descended on Jerusalem and the prophecies of Jesus and the book of Revelation came shockingly true before believers' very eyes. Now, this period of persecution, prophecy, and perseverance comes to life for you in a new work of fiction, The Last Temple, the long-anticipated completion of The Last Disciple trilogy by Hank Hanegraaff and Sigmund Brauer. You'll understand why Revelation's apocalyptic language was perfectly appropriate for these horrifying days and gain new courage to live out your faith in our own troubled times. The Last Temple is our thank you for your gift today. For your gift of $100 or more, we'll send you the whole Last Disciple trilogy. So please partner with us today by calling 888-7000-CRI or visiting equip.org. Is legislating morality biblical? Whether your politics are on the right, the left, or somewhere in between, there is a more fundamental question to answer before deciding how to vote. Are Christians called to use the political process to enshrine biblical morality into law? The latest issue of the Christian Research Journal answers this question in a full-length viewpoint debate. The eye-catching, content-rich Christian Research Journal is CRI's flagship publication, designed to equip you in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Subscribe to the journal online at equip.org or by calling 888-7000-CRI. Once again, here's CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy. And a quick reminder that The Last Temple, the third in my Last Disciple trilogy, now available through the ministry of the Christian Research Institute. And for your gift of $100 or more, receive all three volumes in the trilogy. The final volume, The Last Temple, personalized by yours truly to a family member or a friend. You can check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. You can write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or you can talk to one of our resource consultants at number 888-7000 and the letters CRI. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Lawrence in Kansas, listening on KKCV. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, how are you doing, Frank? The question I'd like to ask is, do you know anything about Les Feldick, Bible teacher from Oklahoma?
Yes, I do. He is what's typically referred to as an ultra-dispensationalist. As such, he believes the church began with the Apostle Paul, and he holds that there are essentially two gospels, one gospel for the Jews and another for the Gentiles. So I don't have a lot of regard for his teaching. I think that even dispensationalists would have a great deal of difficulty with the extremes to which Les Feldick goes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Hank.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Wish I had better news for you.
All right, thanks.
You got it. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Rick in Austin, Texas, listening on the World Wide Web. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Hank. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well.
Thanks. Hey, listen. I go to a great Bible-believing church here in Austin, and although our church doesn't really teach this stuff, I have a lot of friends that have, bought land and stored food and done all these things. And I thought, as a leader of my family, do I need to be preparing? They're telling me, hey, we don't know the date, but the Bible does say, like, we're supposed to know the season. And so I don't know if I'm, like, supposed to be doing these things like these guys are, or what does the Bible say about that?
Well, the Bible doesn't say anything about it whatsoever. What the Bible tells us is that history will continue like a woman in the pangs of birth. There are times where the birth pains are very strong, and there are times where they recede. In like fashion, there are times of relative want and times of great prosperity, and so it will be until the time that Jesus appears a second time. But we have no idea when that is going to happen. So we have to be prudent in everything that we do, but ultimately I think what's even more important is that we learn how to depend on the arm of God and not on the arm of flesh. And remember, all the doomsday predictors have been wrong 100% of the time, every single time. Remember Y2K? Man, that wasn't all that long ago. That was the year 2000, and people were buying generators, and they were moving out of town, and they were buying freeze-dried food, and they're taking all these precautions, and then nothing happened. The only thing they succeeded in doing is embarrassing themselves. Because they thought that there was a way in which they could correlate the events of the book of Revelation with current events. So it is as though they had the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other, and they're trying to predict what was going to happen when. And of course, 2000 was a magical year for them. The reason being that many of them thought that 1967 was a magical start date, and 40 years from that, you'd get to 2007, and then subtract 7 for a tribulation, you get to the year 2000. So there are a lot of people misinformed on how to read the Bible for all it's worth that predicted that 2000 would be a seminal day of destruction and chaos, particularly in the West. Well, it turned out to be false once again, and so now you have these doomsday predictors like Jack Van Impe, who says, well, yeah, I mean, we got pretty much everything right except generation is 51.2 years, so now he's got December of this year as the date. But this date will come and go just as the others, and he'll be proved once again to be a false teacher. So I wouldn't pay attention to these people, because the one thing we know absolutely 100% with certainty, and that is we have no idea whatsoever when the Lord Jesus Christ will appear a second time. And the passages that talk about the season really are not talking about the season of his second appearing, but rather of his coming in judgment on Jerusalem, which is a fulfilled prophecy. So I wouldn't confuse that with what's going to happen when Jesus appears a second time. The Bible simply does not tell us when that is going to happen. We should prepare for that as though it could happen any moment, and be prepared as though it might be a long way off. In the meantime, be faithful and fruitful, just as we are exhorted to do in the book of Revelation. We're going to suffer for a little while. Our vindication will be an eternal vindication.
Thanks.
You got it. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Bob in Nashville, Tennessee, listening on WCRT. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Quick question. In the book of Matthew somewhere, I'm in a car right now, so I can't look it up, Jesus is saying to his disciples, many will come to me in that day saying, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and do many mighty works and miracles? And he will say to them, depart from me, I never knew you. That's one of the more scary scriptures to me, and I was just curious as to who you believe those people would be that he's talking about.
Well, I think in the historical context, Jesus may well, in the Sermon on the Mount here, have been talking about someone like Judas, who performed miracles, drove out demons, and communicated the gospel, and yet Jesus looked beyond the externalities and saw that Judas was not there because he loved the master, but rather Judas was there because he loved what was on the master's table. But in principle, it applies to anyone in any epoch of time who has a said faith as opposed to having a real faith. And remember the context of this, where Jesus says, watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you'll recognize them. And then he says, do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Which is to say that while we are saved by God's grace through faith in Jesus Christ alone, we are saved unto good works. Now, we're not the perfect fruit inspectors. Jesus Christ is, and therefore Jesus can inspect fruit perfectly. We can easily be fooled. But it's not enough to say, Lord, Lord. It is that we should take up our cross and daily follow him, demonstrating that we are genuine disciples. And remember, Jesus is speaking here to people who are going to suffer the mother of all tribulations. And he's telling them, you know, take up your cross, follow me, and you will have a reward in the kingdom of heaven.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You got it, Bob. And with you, I would say it is one of the scariest passages in all of Scripture. Let's go to Darren, St. Louis, Missouri, listening on Bot Radio. Hi, Darren.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, hi. I'm really good. Thank you. Hank, first of all, I just want to say that I listen to you a lot, and I just think that everything you say is so great, and I'm just, I'm nervous.
Well, bless you. Okay. Thank you for that wonderful word. You've encouraged
me. Yes, and I just also pray for you, and I just hope that God just blesses you so much.
Thank you.
The question that I was wondering about was that a friend of mine told me recently that, like, ghosts were actually, like, demons or, like, bad spirits, because I never thought that they were real. I thought that it was just something that somebody had made up. And I just kind of was wondering what you thought.
Well, I agree.
The whole ghost.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Darren. The Bible makes clear that the souls of the departed are either comforted in the presence of God or in agony absence his loving presence. But just as Lazarus was not permitted to return to the land of the living, the Bible makes it dead clear that those who have passed do not inhabit this realm. In fact, that very notion is said to be detestable to the Lord, the notion that there could be a ghost or poltergeist, which means a noisy ghost. So we should note that while the spirits of the dead do not inhabit the land of the living, as you point out in your question, demonic spirits are more than pleased to play on the field of superstition. And ghosts only exist in mythology, but demons are more than happy to feed our sub-biblical delusions. So I love the way you started the question, you phrased the question, because this is, from a biblical perspective, mythology. But we have to be very aware that demons are real. They can't manifest in physical form. Angels can, according to God's prerogative, but demons cannot. They don't have creative power. But they are nonetheless very real, and they do, as it were, sit on our shoulder and whisper into our ear. The whisper cannot be heard with the physical ear, but it can penetrate the ear of the mind. And that's why the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 6 exhorts us to put on the full armor of God. And when we do, we can stand against principalities and powers of darkness.
Okay. Yeah, because, I myself have never, like, feared any kind of, any of those, like, witches or ghosts or anything like that. But I saw, like, on some TV show that, like, you know, these people, you know, there are a lot of TV shows about, like, ghost hunting and stuff, and now they'll, like, capture them on camera or on film, and this one lady in particular was so scared because she thought that she heard a little girl ghost, like, talking to her, and she got it on the tape. And so that's why I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe if it was anything at all, because the lady seemed really sincere and, like, being scared, but if it was anything at all, it was probably just, it really could have been, like, a demon that, you know, saw that she was playing into it and wanted to make us fearful. And especially, like, if you think that there could be a, like, middle ground between heaven and hell, then that gets you, like, occupied, and you're not thinking about, well, is there a God that I need to believe in? Like, is there going to be some bad place that I'm going to have to go, you know?
Yeah, well, the bottom line of all of this is test all things, but remember, experiences are notoriously unreliable. When you test them in light of the Word of God, we know that ghosts are mythology, but demons are real. In fact, I've written about this in my new book, The Afterlife, which will be out next year. Be right back.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's flagship publication designed to equip you in doctrine, defense, and discernment. When you subscribe to the journal, you'll receive a magazine that's not only scholarly in its substance, but beautiful in its presentation, easily accessible and relevant. With stunning graphics and rich content written by respected theologians and communicators, the Christian Research Journal is a must-have resource that no Christian home should be without. Start your subscription today. Call 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff will be right back with more after this. The first century AD, a time of tribulation and terror as the Roman Empire descended on Jerusalem and the prophecies of Jesus and the book of Revelation came shockingly true before believers' very eyes. Now, this period of persecution, prophecy, and perseverance comes to life for you in a new work of fiction, The Last Temple, the long-anticipated completion of The Last Disciple trilogy by Hank Hanegraaff and Sigmund Brauer. You'll understand why Revelation's apocalyptic language was perfectly appropriate for these horrifying days and gain new courage to live out your faith in our own troubled times. The Last Temple is our thank you for your gift today. For your gift of $100 or more, we'll send you the whole Last Disciple trilogy. So please partner with us today by calling 888-7000-CRI or visiting equip.org. Master the main and plain things of historic Christianity in minutes and remember them for a lifetime. Memorable Keys to Essential Christian Doctrine is a user-friendly guide to doctrines that form the dividing line between the Kingdom of Christ and the Kingdom of the Cults using the hankronym DOCTRINE. D stands for Deity of Christ, O for Original Sin, C for Canon of Scripture, T for Trinity, R for Resurrection, I for Incarnation, N for New Creation, and E for Eschatology. To order Memorable Keys to Essential Christian Doctrine in an accessible, fully laminated, and easy-to-use flipchart that you can use to communicate boldly and confidently with precision and clarity, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or go to www.equip.org. That's equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless processes, or created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work, and even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. That's why we want to send you a copy of Hank's Creation Answer Book in appreciation for your gift of ministry support today. The Creation Answer Book puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Your gift is important, supporting more of the broadcast and resources that have changed your life. So please give today by calling 888-7000-CRI or visiting equip.org. That's equip.org. And let us rush you your copy of the Creation Answer Book. Thank you for your partnership. Dangerous mission, a desperate conspiracy. For one legendary warrior, the prophecies in the book of Revelation are about to come terrifyingly true. Hank's new fiction book, The Last Temple, completes his exciting Last Disciple trilogy about Revelation. And it's our gift to you in appreciation for your ministry support this month. In fact, for your gift of $100 or more, you can request the whole thrilling trilogy. To give, go online now to equip.org or call 888-7000-CRI. Thank you. We now return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And a quick heads up, I'm going to stay here for an extra hour once we go off the air today. So if I don't get to you in this hour, I will get to you in the hour that follows. We'll try to take as many calls as we can in this segment, but again, I will stay for an extra hour once we go off the air, so you can hang on. I'll answer your question, or you can call this number if you want to call during that hour and have your question answered, 888-ASK-HANK. Back to the phone lines, we'll talk next to Dan in Renton, Washington, listening on KCIS. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Hank. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I just had a quick question for you. I love listening to you whenever I can. You just spoke with the young lady, and she you shared that angels can take a physical form, but a demon cannot. Like with Lot, the angels took on physical form. And if, in fact, demons are fallen angels, well, at what point did they lose that ability?
Well, they never had that ability. Demons cannot, or angels cannot create. So God, by his own creative prowess, can allow an angel to take on form, but demons cannot themselves take on form. And by the way, if demons could take on form, they could have masqueraded as the resurrected Christ, and now we would lose epistemic warrant for the central event in Christianity, the resurrection of Christ, which ensures our resurrection as well.
Well, I agree with that. So you think the only time that angels then could take on human form is at certain discretionary times that God causes that to occur. It's not in and of their own volition.
Of course, yes. God can appear in human form. Christ can appear in human form. And as you rightly pointed out, angels can, by God's prerogative or at his pleasure, appear in human form. And so in the Old Testament, you have theophanies, Christophanies, and angelophanies. But you never have any evidence that a demon can take on form because, again, a demon does not have creative prowess. And unfortunately, there are many evangelicals today that think that demons can take on human form. In fact, that they did, and they had sex with women. But this is clearly an interjection of pagan mythology on the Bible. It certainly isn't biblical theology.
Okay, and it just, I'm not disagreeing with you, but just for study purposes, where would there be some scriptural indication that when the angels take on the form of men, it's not something that they have chosen to do, like when they appear to Mary, or they appear to the shepherds, or they talk to Lot and stay in his house? Is there anything to clarify that?
Well, it's a theological deduction, but here's the principle. The principle is that you as a human being and angels as created beings do not have the prerogative of creation. So God can create at his own pleasure, but humans can't do that. Neither can angels do that. That is just a basic principle that all theological systems have taught throughout the centuries. And again, it is based on a theological deduction, and that a theological deduction starts with the principle that only God can create.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Linda in Seattle, Washington, listening on KCIS. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I just found a book in my granddaughter's room. She just ran in and ran out and apparently left this book on her dresser. It's a book by Richard Dawkins called The God Delusion.
Yeah.
And right now I'm sitting with it under my foot.
Well, that's a good place for it.
Because I think that's where it belongs. I mean, I'd like to burn it up right now, but I don't want to cause any kind of... Well, I want to be effective in my approach to my granddaughter about this, so I don't want to alienate her by destroying the book.
Yeah, well, I think you are very wise to not destroy the book, but rather to prepare yourself to use the deviations communicated by Dawkins as opportunities to share the truth and life and love that only Jesus Christ can bring to the human heart. Dawkins, unfortunately, lives in an age of scientific enlightenment, but though he lives in this age of enlightenment, he continues being a Rottweiler for Charles Darwin, who was a 19th century scientist. And unfortunately for him, he is therefore embracing scientific paradigms that are out of date. They simply don't pass muster in an age of scientific enlightenment. And of course, the evolutionary paradigm that he embraces is simply an obscurantist paradigm. He has to believe that nothing created everything, that life came from non-life, and that the life that came from non-life produced morals. And you see the kind of tortured things that he has to do to support his mentor, as it were, Charles Darwin, although obviously it wasn't a direct mentorship, but he's the guy that Dawkins lauds. The problem with that is that Charles Darwin was a sexist and a racist. Of course, his magnum opus was subtitled The Preservation of Favored Races and the Struggle for Life. And as Darwin put it, the more civilized so-called Caucasian races have beaten Turkish hollow in the struggle for existence. And then he said, looking at the world at no very distant date, an endless number of lower races will have been eliminated by the higher civilized races throughout the world. And incredibly, what Dawkins tries to do is absolve his exemplar from overt racism. And the way that he does that is he says, well, my exemplar, Darwin, wasn't really talking about races. What he was really talking about was individuals within races. But all you have to do is read the corpus of Darwin's work to recognize that his preservation of favored races and the struggle for life hypothesis clearly involves races and not merely individuals within races. And therefore, to excuse the overt racism and sexism in Darwin's writings is itself inexcusable, particularly when these excuses flow from the pen of a man who has the temerity to castigate those who believe in the creation model and disbelieve his evolutionary hypothesis. He calls them ignorant, stupid, insane, wicked, tormented, bullied, or brainwashed. And I would say instead of using all kinds of ad hominem attacks, it would be good for Dawkins to learn to think clearly and credibly in an age of scientific enlightenment.
How can I... What could I use biblically, or just in on an intellectual level?
Well, the best thing that I would say,
my granddaughter from this avenue that she's.
Well, I mean, I think you want to reason with her, because the same will that gets her into this mindset has to be the same will that gets her out of it. But that's the reason I've written, for example, the Creation Answer book. It counters the contentions of men like Richard Dawkins. So don't be afraid of letting her read it. Even his fellow atheists are embarrassed by Dawkins' poor reasoning in the book. And Dawkins' impoverished training in naturalistic science has rendered him incapable of intelligently contributing to any meaningful dialogue on religion or theology or philosophy. So there are many well-argued refutations of his arguments, and I think that is a wonderful thing. Take the deviation or the bad argument and use it as an opportunity. By the way, there's a book that is a direct counter to Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion. It's called The Dawkins Delusion. So that might be helpful to you as well. Or you may even want to get a copy of it and say, here, you may want to read this as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much. From the gentleman that spoke to you just prior to me coming on,
yeah,
he was asking, the question about spirits.
Yeah.
And I have a question occurred to me as I was listening, that God, Jesus, did appear in human form. He walked through a wall in the upper room. And do demons, God lives in another dimension. Is this not correct? Is there more than the three or four dimensions that we know about? And could they have some kind of form in those dimensions? And could they transcend those lines and come in and out of the dimensions that we live in?
Well, two separate issues here. One is, with respect to demons, no, they cannot take on physical form. They are by nature non-physical. And therefore, we have to look at the ontology of angels and fallen angels to answer that question. But as to the other part of your question, could there be more than three or four dimensions? Of course there could be. And I think this is precisely what we posit when we say that Jesus ascended into heaven. As the God-man, he transcended time and space. You know, if we think about this in just logical terms, if ascended means that Jesus, you know, is traveling at the speed of light, he wouldn't even be on the outer fringes of our little galaxy, and there are 100 billion galaxies with 100 billion stars, and he's suffering from oxygen deprivation by now. So, you know, the notion, of course, is not about moving at the speed of light, trying to get out of our universe, but rather as the God-man transcending time and space. And that's a beautiful concept to dwell on, because Christ is, of course, available to us. He is near to us, but he is nearer than we could imagine. When Jesus appears a second time, as the writer of Hebrews puts it, the veil between heaven and earth will be removed. So he has transcended time and space, very much as you allude to in the prologue to the question. So again, two different issues, but we should not suppose that demons can take on physical form, because by nature or by ontology, they are non-physical beings.
Last question. The devil God asked the devil on an occasion, "Where have you been?" And the devil responded, "Walking to and fro in the earth, and et cetera, et cetera." I'm wondering what form he was in at that point, and he is a demon from what
I understand. But remember that is anthropological language. It is speaking in the language or manner of a human being. So it's heavenly condescension in terms of the language used. If you want to find out more about reading the Bible for all it's worth or mining the Bible for all its wealth, check out my book, The Apocalypse Code. I think it'd be a real big help to you. Sorry to move this along quickly. I'm out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Going to stay right here for an extra hour. For those hanging on, be patient. I'll get to you. And for those calling in for the next hour, a reminder, you can dial this number from now until the end of the next hour, 888-ASK-HANK. So long for now.
You've been listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanna Graf. To learn more about Hank or the Christian Research Institute, just log on to equip.org. Equip.org is a fountain of information and resources designed to help you defend the faith and grow in your knowledge of the truth. You can also stream the broadcast on your computer or download archived broadcast. To talk to a resource consultant by phone, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274, or you can write to us, Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by the Christian Research Institute, a ministry supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters.
It's the first century, and the young Christian church is facing numerous obstacles, but it's determined to not only survive, but thrive. The Last Sacrifice, the second in the Last Disciple series by Hank Hanna Graf and Sigmund Brouwer. As you read The Last Sacrifice, you'll be transported back in time when the ink was still fresh on the pages of Scripture. You'll feel the tension as the early church struggles to follow Christ and share the gospel, despite terrible persecution. You'll take a front row seat in the arena as Christians face death with courage. And you'll be encouraged as John's words from Revelation give hope to the hopeless and life to those fleeing certain death. It will give you a clearer understanding of Bible prophecy as you experience history through the eyes of those who lived it. The Last Sacrifice by Hank Hanna Graf and Sigmund Brouwer. Secure your copy now. Call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or go to equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching graphics with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. In separate articles, Hank Hanna Graf and Steve Gregg make sense of Ezekiel's difficult temple vision.
Other topics include, is legislating morality biblical? Did Jesus and Paul preach two different gospels? Are evangelicals really at war with science? An exploration of how Jack Kerouac shaped the life script of today's millennial generation. A summary critique of Mark and Grace Driscoll's controversial book, Real Marriage, The Truth About Sex, Friendship, and Life Together, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe to the journal online at equip.org. That's equip.org.